Pirate's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hour number 3 begins right now. Thanks for hanging out with us. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Coming up on the program here in about 30 minutes, Will Hampson. We'll talk South Carolina. The open U.S. Senate seat. Now, Darlene Graham, I think Russell Fry is announced. There may be some others, but we'll talk to him about the state of play there. I find that intriguing. Entirely possible that Lindsey Graham's sister could win that U.S. Senate seat and get a 6-year term. Because he was up this year and he won the primary. So they're having to have a do-over August 11th, same day as ours, I think. And that will be who represents the Republican Party on the November ballot in South Carolina. But is it a layup there? I haven't seen any polling. My gut tells me that they'll just go with her. So we'll get into that with Will. I was watching a little bit of her interview with Sean Hannity last night. And he asked her, well, how would you be different from your brother? And her response was kind of that he spends a lot of time on foreign policy and he needed to talk more about domestic politics and domestic issues, the so-called kitchen table issues. So we'll see where we go from there. The sister of Lindsey Graham, a candidate for United States Senate in South Carolina. Toothless Bammer. Jeff, there's a local radio station in Denver that does have a national show one time a week from KOA. WBAMA FEMA guy, he's good. Michael Brown, Brownie, he's the best national guy I've heard since Rush. Interesting. Stylistically, Rush Limbaugh, and I got to know him a little bit over the years. When he got in trouble with the Sandra Fluke thing, they were getting hammered. And there's always been with Rush Limbaugh from his entire radio career, from the late 80s all the way till he died in 17. It was, there was just people who it was their job to try to get the I gotcha and separate the public from him. He's not credible, but they may give him one step back. He took two steps forward. He always got more increasing in popularity, and there were coattails there. There was Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, Mark Levin. There became a marketplace for that national syndicated talk radio. And since he died, you just don't hear it as much. I think his death, it kind of forced what I always thought was coming, was a turn talk radio, make it more local, regional. The subject matter, at least. But there's a lot of turmoil in corporate radio right now. And it's not because of just talk radio. It's terrestrial radio and the way we get music now. People have their Spotify or they download their Apple Music or whatever it may be, and they can listen to whatever they want. They don't need to wait on the song to come back on the radio. Now, a lot of radio does kind of set the tempo of what's popular, what isn't. but it's becoming more difficult to monetize. So it's just forcing an adaptation here. It's the same discussion we have with AI. The same, you know, I mean, there's always going to be these tasks that, you know, things we've always relied on just won't perform anymore. There'll be a more efficient way for people to get their news, or what they listen to in their automobile, be it an audio book or a podcast or whatever, or satellite radio. The delivery mechanisms. But, you just don't hear national syndicated radio talk show hosts move the needle like they once had. Well, you hear, and I don't think Joe Rogan is necessarily the new Rush Limbaugh at all, but that seems to be where the influencers are. Grant, I support Jerry. I believe he's a genuine person. On a texture jet, the two men who tried to replace Rush Limbaugh lack his humor, his insight, his substance, his incisiveness, and the richness of his commentary. It is sad, but they come across as somewhat shallow and therefore boring. I think they do about as good a job as anybody could. No, we should be talking about other radio shows on this one, but those are some tough shoes to fill. And like I said, I don't listen that much. I do have the podcast still. I never canceled my Rush Limbaugh 24/7 subscription. So over the years, I don't think they charge for it anymore, but it's turned into that program. Mike, I wonder how much Carl was concerned when American bombs killed 200 little girls while they were attending school within the first days. Also, Iran is firing at neighbors, yes, but they don't be silly and act like they're attacking random areas in Saudi Arabia. They've been attacking American military infrastructure. Well, I think they've been attacking some of their oil infrastructure as well. Debbie writes, this is more of an amnesty bill disguised as an H-1B, talking about the expansion of the H-1A visas and the time limits, the time constraints associated with them. A new texture, make out-of-state pay $15 toll. That will help pay. But it's an interstate highway. Do you want to go to Mississippi, try to get to New Orleans? You hit the state line and pay a $15 toll? I understand it's a body of water that's very expensive. But I keep saying this. We benefit from having a coast. The state of Alabama is a net beneficiary. The state of Alabama has a port, a tourist economy, fishery, seafood economy. We are the net beneficiary, but part of having these nice things is responsibility. And a part of that responsibility is building a bridge. If you're gonna have civilization on coastlines, crossing bodies of water it's just part of the plan here. If the state wants to cede its turf to Florida or Mississippi or whatever, because they don't want to take care of it and build a bridge that people just passing through are going to use, then we don't deserve the coastline. But that's the way they view it. Well, the only people using that bridge are people who aren't going to stop here, so let's charge them. Well, they just don't have a coast. We can cede territory. Like I said, they want all the benefits of being part of the Gulf Coast, but none of the expenses? That's the way it comes out to me. Don't assume Mobile's vulnerability. We are not hidden in the way as far as North Korea Kim knew to stand down or thought to stand down. Then when the president went and met, the snotty left-wingers whined and hated it. Whiners hated it. I don't know why Korean Iranian leaders and military leaders aren't getting bunker busted. The deal-making, the negotiation obviously have failed. Tim said me, say that he sent me, I read it already. Gene, Israel has 300 plus nuclear weapons. If they dropped one of those nuclear weapons on Iran, it would wipe out Israel. Same goes for Russia nuking Ukraine. Most of Russia would be wiped out. Don't they have small tactical nuclear weapons? It was a hypothetical. It was a weapon of last resort. Buford. I wonder how long traditional radio will last. My kids age from 11 to 14 only listen to radio when they are in the car with me and mom. They do not listen to traditional radio and none of their friends do either. Another joy of life slowly dying in the modern age. When they get older, they'll listen, I think. I think it's an age thing. Adele Jackson explained to me why podcast and why all of these electronic forms of, you know, spoken word have it just taken over. And there's too many steps involved. You got to plug in your phone. Once you plug in your phone, you got to make sure you have the right podcast downloaded or streaming or whatever. You got to find it. There's so many out there. How do you find what you like? But with the radio dial, you just kind of plug and go. I mean, it's already in. You turn it to the station you like. There's, I guess, the barrier of finding the station you like. You should encourage all of your friends to listen to FM Talk 106.5. But there's certain, you know, technological barriers, internet connection. It's the ease. Until, like, you have a screen on your car, and it'll get there maybe someday, where the car is in itself its phone, and you just you push a button, and there's all these podcasts for you to listen to. But I still think we're a good ways away from that. It's the delivery mechanism. And plus, like, the podcast, the things we do on the station are all podcasted already. A lot of people probably listening to this right now are listening to it on tape delay. But I think you may not have as many options, Buford, on the dial, but they'll always be there. There'll always be a way to make money and profit off of it. I just think that this idea of these corporate clusters, the Cumuluses and the iHearts, they're already kind of gearing themselves to become podcast companies. That they got it over their head in a lot of markets. And are feeling the financial crunch because of it. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Still are, it seems. Sadly in search of one step in back of themselves and their slow moving dreams.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. Coming up on the program tomorrow, we got Joey Clark and a couple other guests to be named later. I'll let you know on X/Twitter, X.com/Twitter, /Jeff_Poor. sometime in the 8 o'clock hour. So please check that if you want to know who's coming up on the program. Sean says, should have replaced Rush with Alex Jones. And he said, iHeart Radio is trash. I tend to agree. Well, not all, not across the board, but a lot of it is. I don't know. A lot of it's just the voice tracked and not live. Unnamed texture, how old is your car? Most new cars come with a huge screen in them, Apple CarPlay plus Android Auto installed on them. Once you connect your phone to Bluetooth, it's pretty much exactly how you're describing it. No, I have it on my car. But it's not quite there yet. It's not like part of the aesthetics. You still got to go to your phone, set up subscriptions. I don't think that there's no algorithm to find things I think that are appropriate to your what you want to hear. I mean, do you really want? Maybe some of you do. A podcast from The Economist about U.S. Indonesian relations or something. Because what you do, and you're in their current public affairs algorithm, those are the kind of things you don't get. You're not going to get Tucker Carlson or Megyn Kelly. They're not going to target it right. They still haven't gotten there yet. But it's just a familiarity, and it'll probably be a few years before cars actually get to that point. And then there's also like just sort of knowing what's going on locally at that moment. That, you know, you're not going to get to traffic or weather on a podcast that was recorded 3 days ago. That, especially in, having lived in a major metropolitan area, and you take an Uber or even if you're just driving around City of Atlanta or something, you're listening for the traffic. I mean, that we do that here, but there the traffic nightmare is just beyond our comprehension. And that to me, especially in metropolitan areas, big markets, is where it matters. So you're still going to have some kind of live product is the mechanism for delivery and the content that's being created. Can they coexist in a way that you just have it right at your fingertips? And that's that's a very high hurdle. So, yes, I have CarPlay. I use it all the time. I drive a lot. We're going on a trip. I'll listen to this station on the app. I'll listen in to the guest host you're about to. We'll go through those here in a moment. You're about to get over the 2 weeks I'm gone. I'll listen to Sean. I'll listen to Dan and Dalton. But the live product is another hurdle here, to where it's specifically pinpointed at a certain geographic region, to know that there's a backup on the Bayway, to know that there is a severe weather in the area at that moment, because you won't get that from the Atlantic's podcast on what we heard in the Senate Armed Services Committee last week or whatever. By the way, beginning Friday, you'll get a revolving door of guest host. Friday, April Marie Fogle. Then the following week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, April Marie Fogle as well. Then my buddy Bradley J, you hear him here sometimes. He'll fill in a couple of days next week as well, Thursday and Friday. Will Hampson, our next guest, will be appearing on that following Monday. We got a few others. Erica Thomas going to take a shot at it. Then Scott Buttram, who's done it before. And then we'll end it on that following Thursday before I come back on Friday with Rebecca Watson with the Faro Faith Collective. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. I've thrown away the blues. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with me, your show host, all you got to do is text us, and we'll do our best to respond with the time permitting in the closing moments of today's broadcast. Joining us now on the line, he is our Tuesday regular. You'll get to hear him next Monday, or a week from next Monday, fill in for me. But Will Hampson joins us on the line here. Will, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, doing great, and hoping to carry the torch for you when I fill in on Monday. We'll see how that goes.
We got you got some serious company here with Bradley J, April Murray Fogle, Erica Thomas, and Scott Buttram.
Hey, that's the dream team right there. It doesn't get much better than that. So I was unaware. You're telling me now for the first time, but no, that's great. That makes my job easy.
Murderer's Row there, if you will. Hey, I think you're the guy to talk to about this. The South Carolina Republican primary for U.S. Senate. My gut tells me Darlene Graham's going to just walk away with it, right?
Well, I think the big question here, Jeff, first, the hurdle. There is a law in the state of South Carolina that in order to be on the Republican ballot, you had to have voted in two of the last three Republican primary elections. So first, there's a question of whether Darlene Graham can even appear on the ballot in that sense. I believe she voted in one primary and potentially a primary runoff. Does that count? Is that enough? So there is currently a challenge in the state of South Carolina on whether or not she can even be on the ballot in that sense. But look, assuming she gets over that hurdle, and I do believe that she will, you're starting to see some really interesting things. Not a lot of the kind of heavy hitter power players in the state have come out in support of her, notably the NRSC chairman, Senator Tim Scott, has not come out and endorsed her, has not made his opinion known. However, she is kind of cleaning up in Washington. She's got the support of most of leadership there, minus Leader Thune, but she's got Tom Cotton, she's got Barrasso, she's got a lot of the kind of institutional support up in Washington. So it will be interesting. The knock on Lindsey Graham, right, was always that he was too Washington. He would come back to his home Pickens County and get booed during Trump rallies. Well, here's someone who we really don't know her politics. We really know nothing about her. We don't know what she stands for. We don't know if she's more conservative than her brother, less conservative. She hasn't made any policy positions clear. And now she's kind of getting all of this institutional Washington support without really doing anything, without anyone really knowing who she is. And so I think you could have an opportunity, Jeff, for someone who is kind of that born and bred South Carolina, who's a little more salt of the earth, who's been doing the political things, has gone to all of the county meetings, knows the grassroots and the people. I certainly think there's an opportunity if someone can kind of get a coalescing of support in the state to give her a serious challenge. Because, again, who is she? What does she stand for? Nobody really knows. And so I think it's really interesting that you see this kind of setting up as a South Carolina v. Washington fight. Obviously, she's going to have every resource she needs. I'm sure that, you know, all the rest of the Senate, you know, is going to come out and support her. But the question is really going to be, where does she stand with the voters of South Carolina? And I really don't think we have an answer to that just yet.
Well, the thing is, I mean, from the mid-1950s until now, we've had two U.S. senators in that seat. And it always kind of struck me as, you know, it's sort of like Alabama in that sense that people get comfortable in that state. I don't understand it. I you know, his politics just seemed like always a strange fit for South Carolina. But, you know, no one ever could beat him in a Republican primary. And that's why it feels like to me with her that she's just going to, like, you know, well, there's just it's hard to break this pattern in South Carolina historically.
And look, Jeff, there hasn't been an open seat, a real open election in South Carolina in forever. I mean, I'm sure, as you just mentioned, over 50 years, this current seat has been held by two individuals. And then I'm sure people remember, but Tim Scott was appointed by Nikki Haley, who effectively wanted, Tim Scott always wanted to be governor. He never wanted to go to Washington. And Nikki Haley effectively sidelined him by making him a senator. But all that to say, we haven't had, and even this won't be an open seat now that the individual who was appointed in Darlene Graham is going to run for the seat. But this doesn't happen very often in South Carolina. And it's interesting, I think, to us, especially in Alabama, we've had, you know, numbers of open Senate elections over the past, you know, 6 to 8 years. That doesn't happen in South Carolina. And so are people fed up with that? Do people kind of go, look, this Senate seat, it could be, you know, for another 20 years locked up by someone who was appointed. Do we want to hash this out, or do we kind of want to, you know, just fall in line and give it to the next person in line? I think that's what people in South Carolina are trying to figure out. And look, again, Lindsey Graham was never the most popular. He was someone who always won his elections handedly. But again, he'd go to his home Pickens County and be booed on stage. People did not love Lindsey Graham. I don't know if there are a lot of voters in South Carolina that want another Graham, who we don't know her politics, to be anointed and handed the seat. At a certain point, I think the voters of South Carolina are going to stand up and go, you know what, we'd actually kind of like to make a choice here.
I mean, you have to look at this. There's been, in our lifetimes, Will, and I was born in 76, there's been two like competitive U.S. Senate elections in South Carolina. And that was when Graham ran for the retired Strom Thurmond seat in 2002. And the other one was when Fritz Hollings finally retired as a Democrat, and Jim DeMint won that seat in 2004. So you're right. This just doesn't happen that much. But that just, it just suggests to me, I don't know what it is. People just go to the polls and they just check a box, and you know, you've got some staying power here. I don't know much about Darlene Graham. You're right. The record there, there's a lot that has to be discussed. But you know, she's 62. Would she be one of these people to be in the U.S. Senate for another 20 years if she were to be successful here? And you know, what's left in South Carolina? Well, you just went through a gubernatorial race there. What do you, you know, what is there? Who has it, you know, who's going to be the fresh face, or who has it already been tried, but, you know, that was rejected by the voters?
And you know, the other interesting thing here, Jeff, is that obviously Donald Trump, and, you know, you ask different people and they will give you a different answer on this. But had a very, very close relationship with Lindsey Graham, to the point where it confused, frankly, a lot of people. You know, there were a lot of people even in South Carolina that just didn't get it. They didn't seem like they would be a natural fit. And yet Donald Trump loved Lindsey Graham beyond his role as a senator. They were very close personal friends. They played golf often. And I don't know if people realize this, but the president has done one major fundraiser for a candidate in cycle this cycle, and it was Lindsey Graham. The only person he did a golf tournament for him down at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, this is someone who they really, really liked each other. How much of that is playing into the decision-making here? I mean, the president just lost a very close personal friend. He's obviously come out and endorsed his sister. Does that last forever? You know, does he look up in a couple weeks and see that she's not polling well, that she hasn't gotten the staying power they hoped? And does he come in with a dual endorsement? How does he operate? And does he continue to go all in, as it seems like as of right now he intends to? That's another factor to kind of watch closely, is, you know, is the president kind of doing this out of, you know, remembrance of his close friend Lindsey Graham? And does politics eventually kind of come back into the decision-making process? Or does he go all in, you know, because that institutional staying power from Washington, as we've seen in different races across the country, including obviously the president's support, is pretty huge. So I think you look at all of the factors there. It certainly suggests that she is a strong, powerful candidate. However, you have some really good conservatives, Russell Fry, a congressman from the Myrtle Beach area, who said, you know what, I've looked at all of this. I've kind of taken all of it into account. I still think I can win, so I'm getting in. So it'll be interesting to see how those dynamics kind of evolve as this race goes, because it is a short sprint. It's not a traditional timeline here either.
Yeah, I just South Carolina's one of those states that's hard to figure out, and I got to assume, Will, and you know this, that South Carolina's a lot like Alabama in the sense that, you know, Trump's word or Trump's endorsement is pretty solid, and if he endorses a candidate and he goes all in, all of a sudden the other candidates, their fundraising dries up.
Absolutely. The other interesting dynamic here, Jeff, is that because of some interesting South Carolina laws, some of the members of the House who have already qualified for their seats are able to run for both simultaneously. So I just mentioned Russell Fry. He has the ability, because he's already qualified for that House seat, is on the ballot. He can run for both. And were he to lose the Senate race, he keeps his House seat. And were he to win the Senate seat, he would then have to just resign his House seat, and that would then go to a special election I'm not sure when, but would be early into the next Congress. But you've got all of these kind of unique dynamics here. But, you know, again, I think you're right, Jeff. I mean, the institutional staying power, all of the resources that flow into someone who's being endorsed by most of leadership. I will say the one I'm really, really interested to keep an eye on is Tim Scott, because I think that is someone who controls a lot of what happens in the state of South Carolina. He's now the senior senator. A lot of power in that state runs through him. In addition, he's also currently the chair of the NRSC. So you kind of take all of that into account. It will be really interesting to see where he falls. And I don't think he wants to be on the wrong side of it either. So I think if he does end up coming in on the side of the new Senator Graham, I think it will be a sign that it's pretty much over.
Because I think Trump leans on him, right? That you know, Tim Scott's, if Trump does do what we suspect he will do, Tim Scott's not going to go against Trump, is he?
No, I just don't see that. I think Tim Scott understands that he needs a lot of help as NRSC chairman across the country. He needs the president to be involved in a lot of races. He needs the president to be involved in fundraising efforts. So I do find it hard to believe that he would go against the president here. But again, there are also interesting dynamics in the Senate right now, Jeff. I mean, you look at it, and Leader Thune obviously has made a statement. As of now, he is not going to endorse the Trump-endorsed candidate. Now, we can make all sorts of guesses as to why that is, but I think my guess, and probably most educated people would have the same assumption, is that he just doesn't want to give the President Trump a win right now, with how tough the president is being on the Senate. So some interesting dynamics there where, you know, obviously she is the institutional choice, but you still have some lingering feelings. And that is obviously making some of these decisions tougher for some of those senators that just don't want the president to get a win.
Joined by Will Hampson of P2 Public Affairs on the program. Will, the other business of Washington, D.C., and there's still a lot of loose ends to tie up here, but I don't know. The clock is running, and the Save America Act, there tends to be holdouts here that's stopping a lot of progress from being made on things, but there doesn't seem to be the will from Republicans, particularly in the Senate, to really pursue this aggressively.
Yeah, I think you have two camps of Republicans, right? One that goes, you know what, it helps us in November to get Democrats on record voting against an issue that 88% of Americans support. You have Republicans like Rick Scott, Mike Lee, who say, let's go for it. Let's give it a shot. Let's do the best we can. And at the very least, we get to go back to Georgia and say John Ossoff voted against this big issue. We get to go to some of these swing states and say, look, guys, this is what the Democrats are doing. And then you've got Republicans that say, we're never going to vote for this. This is ridiculous. And so let's just drop it. Obviously, I think in the end, the Republicans who just say drop it are going to win. I don't think Thune is on board with putting any pressure on Democrats. I think he's shown that that is not a priority. And so I think it is kind of dead on arrival here. But you will have some Republicans that continue to say, look, guys, let's at least make Democrats vote on this and show us where they stand so we can go back and campaign against it.
Well, last question on that then, because if Thune's not, he doesn't seem at all panicked. He's got to feel pretty good about where Republicans are and into November on the Senate side, especially with the Graham Plantner stuff. And Susan Collins, I think, is going to probably pull it out there. The map's just going to be hard for Democrats to overcome.
And frankly, Jeff, I don't think he cares. I don't think he believes that his position is in jeopardy. I think he believes he's got enough of the Senate. There's still establishment Republicans that will vote for him. They will never coalesce around a real conservative. You've got some individuals who will come out and say, we need new blood. You know, we need more conservative action. But behind closed doors, when it comes down to the voting for leader, they won't do it. They don't have the courage to actually pull the trigger for change. And so if you're John Thune, your job is pretty safe. You've got a lot of liberal senators who are going to make sure that you're the leader as long as you want to be. No conservatives are going to have a voice at the table. So at the end of the day, what's the pressure? What's the incentive? There's not one.
Will, you got to get out of here. Folks will find you online. Where can they look?
The Will Hampson on X, Jeff.
Will, we appreciate it, and we'll hear from you a week from Monday. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, as always. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I don't know what's wrong with me, because I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey! Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hell raisers. People, get out of our way wherever we go.
Come and date alive like I do every night from the heart of Uranio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheating songs. Here's open everybody out in radio land. Find the love just as true as mine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on what's left of this Tuesday morning. Tomorrow on the show, we'll have Joy Clark and a couple other guests to be named later. Derek, I like when you fill in for McLean in Birmingham. You actually take calls. I don't fill in for McLean that much. Leland Whaley, so you'll hear me on. But that's just that's the format of the show. Hi, Jeff. After I listen to you, I switched to XM and listen to Andrew Wilkow. You are both are the bomb. You should stick around and give Sean Sullivan Midday Mobile a try. Tim, can you ask April to wear a miniskirt one day? Well, she's on the radio. What does that do for you? Mike, so basically Carl's all for driving down wages, importing cheap foreign labor. So instead of our sons and daughters having a decent paying career, they could go fight with the sand people. That's his basic strategy. That seems a little harsh. And then how about a pre-recorded? I'll unnamed texter. I'll take a look at that later on. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
I don't know. Maybe a show good enough to beat out some kind of satellite radio. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's all right, man. It's all right. 35 years now in it. You know, there's only like people, it's been kind of a behind the curtain show you had. There's only, I think, about 500 people that do what we do in the country. And really, if you pair back the people that are just like ancillary or once a week shows, I mean, that number drops to like upper 200s. That's it. People that do this in the nation. That's all that's left.
It's hard to do. It really is.
You're one out of 200 something, by the way.
Because it's like this. Sure, everybody can watch Fox News and get a handle on what's going on nationally, and there's very talented people that do that. Who can really dial it in locally and has a grasp of what's going on locally? That's a challenge, and you know it's something we should be grateful for in our area.
You know, it is. It's you know what I wanted to do with this station when we launched it, but it is interesting too on the national side when they try to fill in. They got politicos. You know, you heard it with like Huckabee and you know the late Herman Cain and all that. They're going to put them on. because they could give good speeches or whatever. And after about a year, I think they all realized, oh, this is kind of hard. I got to do a show 5 days a week, not just give a speech every month. And, well, they're not doing that anymore, are they?
No, well...
Yeah, Herman Cain can't, yeah.
Yeah, the others, I guess, has moved on to other things. But it's really hard to know locally, especially, because you just don't have that kind of media coverage anymore.
For sure. Coming up, April Bree Fogel. So, Tim, get yourself under control. It's going to join me. Also, John Sharp. I don't know what he's wearing. He's on the show. That and a whole lot more. Midday Mobile, just minutes away.
If he is wearing a mini skirt, you have to let us know.
I will know. I don't think so, though. My Eagle Scout buddy, I don't think he is.
I got to get out of here. We'll do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.